Good morning, afternoon, or evening, everybody, depending on when you are listening to this. This is a brand new episode of Waldman's Words. My name is Emily Burke, and I co-host the show. My last name is not Waldman. Sorry to have lied to you all, but Scott Waldman, the namesake of the show, will be in 1 second. So we have a great episode tonight. Actually, quite a last minute. We had a last minute cancellation, but, you know, stuff happens in life, and you just got to work through it. And it was a blessing in disguise because we reached out to Jamie Roberts, an amazing publicist, saw if she had anyone who would want to come on the show. And we got connected to a guy named Aunt C, who is a drummer and the creator of an awesome app called Meat Hook. So basically, if you are looking to get into the music industry or you're a music industry professional, you could go on there and you could mentor other people, or you could find a mentor, you could ask for advice and everything all on one app. And it's so easy and so awesome. And I'm so glad that he thought of it and put it together because it's exactly what the industry needs. So, you know, you can listen to the show every single Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern time, or you can listen to the podcast on adobe.com, Spotify, iTunes, and now your Amazon Alexa. You could ask Alexa to enable Adobe Radio. And then whenever you're feeling like it, you could go, Alexa, play Adobe Radio. And Alexa should do that for you, unless for some reason your Alexa's not working or rebelling or not plugged in. That happens sometimes. You ever try to do something and it wasn't plugged in and you feel like an idiot? If a lot of you said no, then I feel like the idiot, but I do that all the time. Anyway, we're getting sidetracked and this is just the intro. So we're going to be calling Aunt C in 1 second. I believe he's in New York City. We are in beautiful, sunny Burbank where there's no parking spots. And, you know, I need to say one nice thing about Burbank. I was born in Burbank. So thanks, Burbank, for that. I'm unsure when this episode will be up because who knows anything anymore. It's either September or October, so hopefully it's gotten a little bit cooler wherever you are. We're feeling good today. Today is a great day. It is a beautiful Wednesday. It's probably a Tuesday when you're listening to this, unless you're listening on the podcast, in which case I say thank you because I edit those podcasts. And I'm not saying it takes a lot of effort, but, you know, I appreciate that my hard work is being listened to. So sit back, relax. Let's get this episode started. We'll be right back with Aunt C. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Waldman's Words with Anthony C.
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 Hi.
How are you? Great to be here.
I just want you to know that Jamie Roberts is amazing, and Jamie Roberts facilitated this approximately 90 minutes ago. It's badass.
Yeah, I got a text from her, and she said, you know, this is a great opportunity, and
she lied.
I know you're probably really busy with a million things, but if you could do this in an hour, that would be great. And of course, I'm always looking for an opportunity to speak with good people about what I'm doing and you know, the great things that we've been working on.
Can I try to pronounce your name? Because, you know, the people listening to the show live right now or on the podcast app or on Spotify or on Alexa or whatever they do, because everyone's different and drums to their own drummer. See why I did that, Mr. Drummer Guy? But basically, is it pronounced citronite? Is that wrong?
That's wrong.
Yes, I fucked up.
All right, just another guess.
Citrinity.
That's correct, except you're emphasizing the wrong spot. I told you this is difficult. It's citrinity.
I mean, 2 out of 3 ain't bad, right?
You said citrinity. I said citrinity.
Okay, well, I mean, obviously I'm not going to correct you on your name. That'd be weird. Can you pronounce my last name? Because most people get it right.
Honestly, I've only been introduced to you as Scott. Is it?
Well, then I'm like Madonna. Then there is no last name. I am Scott Donna.
Are you Warden?
Waldman. Well, I am a warden for the artists I manage because I'm an artist manager, and essentially that's what I do for a living. But it's actually pronounced Waldman, and it's spelled
Waldman.
Waldman.
Got it. All right.
I Scott it.
Now we got all those crazy name introductions out of the way.
So did you have a tough time, you know, growing up when people butchered your name in first grade?
I did not have a tough time with it, but it you know, it happened regularly, so I got very used to it. And, you know, my dad, who's in the booking and entertainment, you know, he's a booking agent, so he's in the entertainment business. A long time ago, before I was even born, my dad had the same issue, so he went with Tony C. So as I got older and realized that's probably the way to go, especially because...
It's the way to Goni for Tony.
Yeah, as my first name is Anthony, so I a lot of my friends, close friends, called me Ant. So I thought when I put Ant and C together, Antsy, and I'm always, you know, I always got ants in my pants.
No, I get it. I mean, you sound literally like my mother, because, and that's all I'm going to say. I'm not even going to attempt to follow that up with a joke. But basically, the cool.
Got a deep voice.
No, I don't. I'm not saying that she sounds like that. I'm saying you sound like her in terms of being antsy. But yeah, no, my mom actually sounds exactly like Aunt C. Exactly.
Oh, okay.
So she's a drummer. Her father was a booking agent, and she currently works with Jamie Roberts.
Wow, that's interesting.
I'm kidding. But what's crazy is that in this last minute email, basically it said your last name, which I'm not even going to try to say again. I'm just going to say it's pronounced.
So totally.
Basically it said in parentheses, Aunt C. And so now we're here.
Yeah.
And we're not feeling Aunt C. We're feeling super.
I'm feeling Aunt C, but.
Whoa. Oh, well, is there anything I can do?
No, I'm just, that's just me. That's just how I am.
Oh, I just don't want you to feel that way about this process because it's designed as a therapeutic process.
Oh, yeah, no, the show's always super chill.
Super chill. Waldman's words. No sarcasm?
Yeah.
Should I lay down?
You can. You could pretend. I mean, basically, like I said earlier, I'm an artist manager, so essentially I'm a doctor, lawyer, and therapist, but with none of those qualifications. So if you want to sit down, actually, yeah, fuck it. Lie down right now. How did your mother make you feel?
She made me feel special.
You know what? Your mom sounds awesome. So,
she really is.
Well, I mean, you grew up in the entertainment industry, as you said, and that's something I didn't know from the notes. So when your father was working on that end, in the booking world, was there a particular project that he was affiliated with that you really gravitated to?
Well, sort of. You know, he took me to a ton of shows, and he would be the guy that had to go and pay the band, or he'd have
like
to
settle out,
collect the money, and you know, he took me with him, and I got to sort of watch the band back from backstage or side stage. So at a young age, I really got exposed to music. That's
no, but what band specifically, though?
What specifically? I mean, I can't even think of the earliest.
Well, it's okay if you can't. Then what were you listening to? Like, because I can tell you when I was a kid, the music my parents showed me, it was Beatles, Beach Boys, and I, through a bunch of friends in elementary school, like Weird Al was everything. But then in middle school, I got into Green Day, Nirvana, and Weezer on my own. So what was, I guess, either your preteen music or your teenage music that really spoke to you?
When I was a kid, I was a big Michael Jackson fan. My parents were way into the Beatles and Beach Boys as well. But, you know, as I got older, I was like a big Motley Crue fan. Like my first big concert that my dad didn't take me to, you know, was the Motley Crue Girls, Girls, Girls tour that came to my town.
Which was
so,
where?
Upstate New York. It's called Utica. It's between Syracuse and Albany.
Oh, we love upstate New York. We actually just had someone. Derek Brewer is from upstate New York. Isn't that right? He was from Utica.
Derek Brewer is an artist manager who is in the studio. He manages Crown the Empire, Dance Gavin Dance, Palais Royale. He's from there. But most importantly, Emily Burke, to my right, yes. Her family is from upstate New York.
Do you know Schenectady, New York?
Yes, I do. That's very close to Albany, right?
Yep. My dad, born and raised. I'm very happy I was not born and raised.
Burn.
I don't like snow. But I do love Stewart's, so shout out to upstate New York, and if you know what Stewart's is, they have the best ice cream.
I'm a fan.
Yeah, yep. I know what Stewart's is.
Hell yeah.
Okay, cool, yeah, so very similar. You know, I did grow up in Utica. I do hate snow. Yeah. I've been in New York City for 25 years. I moved to New York City when I was 18 years old, and I think I'm about ready to pack up and get out of the city at this point.
Well, but I'm just very curious because I'd say the first half of this show is about, you know, what got you into music, maybe influences, just certain things in your life that inspired what you're going to do in the future. And then the second half, we talk about your actual current career or career goals or whatever. But
awesome.
I'm going to ask you a random question right now that you might have never been asked. What Motley Crue song spoke to you the most when you were growing up?
Ooh, wow. Okay, that is...
You brought up Motley Crue, man. I'm just extending on that. In my theater of pain.
I guess my the earliest song that I really loved was On With The Show. It's not a very popular one. But it was off of their, I believe, their first album, and On With The Show. I don't know. It evoked a feeling inside me, kind of like, you know, I don't know. Whenever I hear it, I just kind of go back to those early years of discovering that band, and just like dying to go see them live. And
did you see The Dirt? Or Read the Dirt?
I saw it three times.
Oh, shit. Okay. Did you read the book?
I read bits and pieces of it. Honestly, I think I did read the whole thing. It's been so long, but I only remember bits and pieces.
I can tell you this. I enjoyed the Dirt movie, and I'd say I'm a Motley Crue fan. They're not my favorite band. They're not my least favorite band. But without a shred of doubt, the Dirt, I read it maybe 10 years ago, I'm not sure exactly when. I can tell you that it is the best book, in my opinion, about rock music I've ever read.
Really?
It's incredible.
Just because it felt like so honest, or just it was interesting?
That honest and interesting, it was a page turner. It had a lot of different perspectives. I really like the books that basically kind of have a bunch of people's voices in it, as opposed to like if it was just a book by Tommy Lee, which I'm not saying that'd be bad, but this had all them. It had their representation, had their A&R. It was just, I recommend you reread this book, Antsy, and then we can talk about it and you'll be less antsy.
Okay. That's cool. I'm a big Howard Stern fan. Did
you
ever hear the interview that he had with the band once the book came out? This was obviously many years ago. Did you ever get to hear that?
I am a Howard Stern fan as well. And an interesting stat about Howard Stern is that more people who don't like him listen to him than people who do like him, because he's that polarizing. And what's crazy is Howard Stern actually wrote two books that I love, Private Parts and Miss America. And when he interviewed Motley Crue, we should actually let Emily know this.
Yeah,
it was
never seen
fucked
this.
Up.
Oh, yeah. Why?
I'll let Antsy explain.
Well, I remember that he brought up a bunch of stuff in the book, and because he's notorious for reading and having his people read everything and sort of find every fact they can, even if they're very obscure.
It's a good thing to be notorious for, though, right? I mean, that's a thing that I would say.
Extremely prepared.
Well, I mean, I literally interview people, as proven by this interview right now, and I had not the most preparation for this because we booked it 90 minutes ago, but I had a call with Jamie, and I wanted to get from the horse's mouth, as much about you as possible, so that I didn't just come in here like, hi, Antsy. So I think it's amazing that Howard Stern, who, you know, he could do whatever the fuck he wants. Oh, and he's an incredible, I mean, you could argue he's a troll. He's definitely gotten less trolly, but let's go, like, what specifically about that interview stuck out to you?
The fact that he brought up a bunch of stuff that turned out when they had to answer questions about it, that they sort of were like looking at each other like, did that really happen? Is that actually in the book? And it sort of exposed them to a certain degree, at least in my mind, that they didn't truly write this book with facts. And it seemed to be that there were a lot of stories that were made up and thrown into the book, or at least that's how that interview made me feel.
You know what's funny about that, though? No, I love that you brought that up, because obviously I wasn't intending on talking about Motley Crue this much, but I'm very happy we are. And I'm rereading the book right now, and because when I really like a book, I reread it. And let's give a shout out to Ben Lifson at 11/7, because that's a label that sent me a bunch of vinyl and this book, and I'm rereading it. And something that I just didn't recall from reading in the past was that even in the intro or the foreword, they say a lot of characters are composite characters, and the names have been changed to protect the guilty and innocent. So some of the characters in this book are combinations of maybe potentially like 20 different people in one. Right, so yeah. maybe that's what happened. I don't know.
It could be a cop-out as well. But either way, it's a great read. They're a great band, and I'm glad that they took it the next step, and they had talked about it for many years, but I'm really glad that they took it the next step and actually made the movie after all those years after the book came out. So, you know, and it's an amazingly great movie. I would say one of the best, there's probably gonna be a lot of people that disagree with me, but I would say one of the top five best rock and roll movies. Now, I'm not comparing it to
No, you're comparing it to what you think it is. It's 100% subjective. And I honestly disagree with you on that, but you're entitled to your opinion. I enjoyed the movie, just not to the point of watching it three times. But for the record, I'm happier that you watched that three times more than movie X or movie Y. Yeah. So, like, cool.
I think I watched right. The Dirt, like, two times.
Me too.
Yeah.
I saw it twice. You know, three times a lady. Well, not going to do that.
I might. I liked it.
It made me feel like a kid again, you know, and yeah. I think that's – it was very nostalgic for me to sort of – and I think that's why I had to watch it more than once. It just – it really made me feel like I felt when I was like a 13-year-old kid about to go see them play, you know, the first big concert I saw them play, you know.
Well, I just want you to know that this will be the very last Motley Crue question I ask of this segment of the interview, but – who is your favorite member? And I'm assuming I know the answer.
You probably think you know the answer. But
no. I think that you're going to think that I think that I know it, but you might think that I don't think that I don't think that. And then you're insane. I actually – well, you're thinking I'm going to say Tommy because he's a drummer, and that's not right. Who I was going to say.
Okay. Well, my first reaction – well, you were asking me, I was
going to
say Tommy. And then I said, you know, it was back in the day, Tommy was my favorite because I'm a drummer. Yes. But I would have to say that that Nikki Sixx
I knew it.
Because he is the songwriter, and he is sort of the person who's sort of melded it all together. Tommy is definitely a huge influence as far as his drumming goes. But Nikki's the one who really put that band together.
Well, no, he literally is the one who put it together. And if you want a fun fact, so as I mentioned, and maybe Jamie mentioned, I'm an artist manager, and I co-manage this guy named Frank Zumo with another manager named Chris Neri. Frank plays in Sum 41, but the cool thing is that
me and Frank are tight.
Well, Frank's fucking awesome, and I'm seeing him tomorrow, so I'll tell him that we did this interview. But the really cool thing was that when Tommy Lee got hurt, Frank drummed for Motley Crue.
Yeah, he's one of my heroes because of that.
It's pretty fucking cool, right?
I have another friend named Glenn Sobel who plays with Alice Cooper, and he got to do the same thing when they were touring together. on the last, this was on the end, the last tour that they did. So he didn't get to go up in the roller coaster, but he did.
The spinning thing, you mean? Like, I just moved my finger and you're not in the studio, so that doesn't help.
No, it's actually the last tour, they had a roller coaster that went from the back of the stage all the way to the seats in the way back of the arena, and Tommy sort of rode his drum kit while playing and spinning all the way to the back, and then so Glenn got to play the show and learn all the tunes. Of course, he knew a bunch of them, but to actually learn them all so that he can play them that night, you know, kind of like what I did, where I, you know, you booked me like 90 minutes ago or whatever. Mm-hmm. Glenn got the call about 2 hours prior.
You don't turn that shit down, do you?
Yeah, yeah. But you know, it was like, you know, he was, you know, he got to play with those guys in a sold out arena for like, I think, 5 shows. So that, yeah, that's an insane, something insane that you get to say and that you get to experience. I told him many times that I live vicariously through him.
Well, girls, girls, girls should be called Glens, Glens, Glens. So very, very, very quick question, and then we're going to take a short break. So actually, this is a two-part question. Emily, you can handle the adjective. Okay. I've got a very important question. So who would you say, from being a drummer, is the most impressive live drummer you've ever seen besides Frank Zumo?
Buddy Rich.
You saw Buddy Rich? Wow. That's cool.
Well, no. I mean, you're talking about watching them live.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm talking about witnessed play live.
Oh, okay.
Because Buddy Rich, yeah, he's a boss. But I'm curious, like, from your eyes.
Oh, shoot. Okay. Say the question again.
Sure. Who is the most impressive live drummer you've ever seen?
The most impressive live drummer that I've ever seen.
Yes.
I'd have to say my buddy Chris Coleman, who's currently on tour with Beck.
Okay.
That dude is a monster and can make anything sound musical while he's also flailing everywhere and playing as many notes as possible, but very musically.
Well, what's crazy about Beck is not a lot of people know this, but he has like the pick of the litter in terms of his session guys, his backup band, because he's fucking Beck. And there was a band called I'm a Robot, which I'm not sure has ever been mentioned on Adobe Radio, but it was all ex-Beckers.
So
that's why they're on tour with them. Okay.
That's it. Yeah. That was that.
They're,
so
they're on tour with Beck. Awesome.
There you go. And Emily,
I did not know that.
Well, you know what? On Waldman's words, you can learn a lot. And I'm going to stop that voice right now and ask Emily to ask you the question that we typically ask our guests from the first half, and then we'll take a short break.
First off, just as a side note, I feel like that's a really interesting choice, because when I think of Beck, I don't necessarily think of drums. So that's interesting, and I need to see that. But
Beck drop.
All right, so we're going to end this first segment. And what we usually do is, I know this was the Motley Crue fan hour, but we ask our guests to kind of describe the first half of this show in one adjective. So if you could give this first half one adjective, what would you say?
Interesting.
See, that word I'm sorry, I got to interrupt you, man. That's a word that I use in the same sentence as like, yo, that painting was ugly.
We did a few episodes ago something called Waldman's Rants, where me and a guy in a band that we co-managed, we gave him a bunch of stuff that
Tom
Kunzman
of 18th and Addison. Come on, yes. Emily, plug him.
Sorry, Tom. And one of the things that we said is the words interesting, fine, or okay. Because anytime someone says that, he'll always get on his case. I'll accept interesting.
I'm not really mad at you, because I think you meant it in a fascinating way. But like, if someone were to describe your company in a one-word sentence and say interesting, you could be offended, or you could be like, oh, shit, that's awesome. Thoughts on that, Aunt C?
Well, you should have gave me a few choices.
No, no. No. I shouldn't have done anything.
Should have been multiple choices.
No. Well, then, you know what? On Aunt C's words, when you interview me, you can do that.
Okay. Yeah, you'll be on the list.
Is it on the shit list?
The do not book list.
The do not disturb list. Awesome. Well, we're going to end on a short laugh. So enjoy these songs. Enjoy these commercials. Enjoy going to the bathroom. Enjoy staring at the ceiling. We'll be right back with Waldman's words in just a few. All right. Waldman's words. Scott Waldman, Emily Burke, Aunt C, career time.
We're back.
Bitches.
I was thinking whether or not to say bitches or guys. I'm like, what mood am I in today?
I mean, I think I know what mood you're in every day.
Bitches, you're right. Bitches. Yeah.
What's up, Ant?
I'm having a great time with you guys so far.
We're having a great time with you so far. So now let's talk about, your career. Crazy. So it seems like you do a lot, but let's just talk about from the age of 20 onward. What were you doing for a living when you were 20 years old?
Okay, so I was living in New York City, and I was working at a music school that I attended when I moved to New York City when I was 18. So when I was 20, I had already been there about a year as an official employee. But when I was a student there when I was 18, I was sort of like a student worker. So from this first day that I arrived in New York City and started studying at this music school, they sort of put me to work. And believe it or not, I'm still there 25 years later.
Silver anniversary, dude.
Yeah.
So, but in what capacity were you there?
Okay, so I went to this school as a drum student, and it's called the Drummers Collective. Now it's called the Collective School of Music. And when I was 20, I think I was running their pro shop. They had a pro shop where they sold, you know, T-shirts and books and drumsticks and strings and that kind of stuff. So, at an early age, I always had ideas on, what they should do. Have you guys, I would always go to the director and say, hey, do you ever think about selling this in the shop or doing this or doing that? And I think I bombarded him with so many different suggestions that he just asked me if I wanted to manage the shop. So 20 years old, I managed the shop, and moving on into the following 20 some odd years, I worked my way up in the place, having worked almost every job title that you can have in that place. And I'm currently the director and have been since 2010.
2010 was a novel year for a lot of things, and it was the first year of this decade. And I guess we're going to flash forward to that. So, I mean, that's cool that you did that. But what else happened that year for you? Because we could honestly have like a major show just about that year. I'm very curious if it's a similar thing that I'm implying in my brain.
In 2010, what happened for me? I don't know. I was on tour for the second half of 2005, all of 2006, and the beginning of 2007. And over having coming off tour in the middle of 2007 or the beginning of somewhere in the early 2007, I just kind of went back into the school and tried to sort of pick up the pieces and get my job back. And that happened. And in 2010, I was probably, I was much, I was settled back in, and the time was right, and they needed some new young blood to sort of grab the reins of the school and take it to the next level. And I was their choice. So
that's wonderful. That, I mean, first of all,
I can't really,
just because someone's a good drummer or guitarist or bassist or singer does not mean they're going to be a good teacher. And it's badass that you have that foundation.
Yeah, and I don't want to make it seem like I teach. I run the school.
But you know what I mean. You know what I mean. Like works with kids or whatever.
Yeah, just being in the education space and you know, sort of helping the younger generation sort of you know, get the skills together so that they can pursue what they're passionate about.
What are you passionate about?
I'm extremely passionate about helping. You know, helping people really just in general, but you know, I gravitate towards music people, musicians, and you know, I'm trying, you know, this is a really, really complicated environment to try to start a career, especially in these times. So I think it's really important to find ways to help guide them, even if you're sort of trying to find a way to guide yourself. I think there's still a lot you can offer younger musicians and artists who are trying to sort of make something of this, because, you know, music is something that if you're really passionate about it and you're talented and you can make good music, it's just like what you were saying, it really doesn't mean that you're going to have a career. And one that's going to allow you to sustain yourself and maybe start a family at some point, maybe have thousands of people listening to your music. But I think there are definitely a lot of different ways that you can accomplish a music career. And so my main passion is to create an environment where the younger generation of artists and musicians can at least feel that they have a bit of a foundation and support group.
Because there was none for me, I can tell you that. And I spoke with Jamie about this actually before we did the show, because I'm aware of who you are, and I was before, and I'm aware of your, you know, your business as well. But that's the reason why I have Waldman's Words, is because I want some kid in Idaho listening who wants to be an artist manager, who wants to have an app, or who wants to be a booking agent or an assistant, to have you know, a bunch of content / safe space. So I think it's badass that you do that, and I'd love to hear more.
Awesome, man. You know, that I think it's important for people like us,
like incredible humans like us. Is that what you're implying?
Exactly. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, you know, the time that we dedicate to helping these striving,
because everyone starts somewhere. Like I mean, you were lucky that you had a booking agent father, but there's other people that like have less than both of us. And like, I grew up in New York without, you know, an entertainment foundation, but I grew up 45 minutes from the city. But some kid, like I referenced Idaho earlier, but some kid in, you know, sub-Saharan Africa can listen to this show.
And I think, you know, it's a good segue into, and you kind of like built up to it, but you created something called Meat Hook that is kind of like bringing everything about this together.
Yeah, I mean, Scott, what you said about being lucky because I had somewhat of a support group, like within my dad and, you know, in the environments that he was able to put me in at a young age, that's exactly it. I mean, I realized very early on in my career that I am one of the lucky ones that is exposed to all this stuff. And there's plenty of people in all, you know, in all around the world that don't necessarily have that. So yes, Meat Hook is an app that I created. I started working on it in 2016. We launched in 2018, and we're about,
I got married in 2016, just so you know. So that was a good year, except for the whole Donald Trump thing.
Yeah,
you know, this show, you know, I could say whatever the fuck I want, so fuck you, Donald Trump. Anyway, back to you, Aunt C.
So the app just allows you to connect with people and you know, professionals, I should say, in all areas of the music business, first and foremost. But recently we did open up some new categories. We do have a business, a sports, and an entertainment category. But the general concept is that you can, if you're an artist, if you're a musician, if you're anyone, if you're a professional in the music business and you have something to offer, you can set yourself up as a host on the app, which allows you to create a profile, to name your price, and to offer one-on-one video calls to anyone who is interested in learning from you. Maybe you teach lessons, maybe you give advice, maybe you're a mentor, maybe you just have a wealth of experience and you want to be able to allow people to ask you questions so they can sort of put together in their own head what might work for them. It's just a way to connect to people who would not necessarily have ever been able to meet otherwise, so that information can be shared, and the person who's paying for the video call, because what happens is they pay per minute to have this one-on-one video interaction, and they can just ask questions and and sort of create their own path. By
well, it's a consultation, correct? Would that be
absolutely.
The? Yeah, I mean, I'm a consultant as well, so it's completely subjective. I mean, it totally depends on the minute, the hour, or the consultant. But at the end of the day, it's a very valued service, in my humble opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I'll agree with that, and I'm gonna ask you, and you guys might have different answers to this, but maybe you'll have the same because you're kind of in the same realm. But I feel like there's a lot of people out there that maybe don't see the value in paying for a consultation, or maybe thinking that they'll be able to find, you know, a mentor on their own without having to do like pay a price like that. Like, what would you say to someone who's like, well, I don't want to pay for a consultation. What's the point of that?
Well, I think every conversation that you have with someone who's quote unquote walked the path before you is a learning is a learning experience. I think that, it's important to understand the history and to be able to talk to someone who's already been there, and that will help you. You know, everyone's got their own aspirations, and there's no right or wrong answer for like different people.
No, I mean, there are some wrong answers. Sorry, not trying to be a dick, but there's some people that are consultants that give the absolute wrong ways to do things. And I know that I don't think that you would have any of that on your brain, but I hear some of the stupidest shit on a minutely basis. Anyway, sorry, back to you.
Well, I think there's always going to be that, but you know, that person's perspective is different than the next person's or yours. And everyone has their own, their own path that they took or their own path that they're on. And I think, learning all aspects and, the important thing is, listen, there's so much content out there. There's so many people who claim to have walked the path already and have already.
But I think what I mean, though. Like, listen, I think the two most powerful words in the English language are "I understand." So I brought up Donald Trump earlier, and I'll bring it up again for this analogy. I understand why he won. I don't agree with it. I don't agree with 99.9% of what he said, but I understand it. But there are some wrong things, like the fine people on both sides. That's just wrong. That's just a wrong statement, I mean, morally to me. So I do understand perspective, but in terms of advice, I understand that like every single person has their own story, their own X, Y, or Z, but sometimes, and sometimes means once or more, people give the wrong information. And I speak at conferences regularly, and sometimes there's this person sitting next to me on a panel, I'm just like, that is so antiquated, that may have worked in 1966, but it hasn't worked since 1967. So that's what I'm talking about. I do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, good.
I definitely hear you.
But let's go back to you and your company. So what's a typical day in the life of Aunt C?
Well, I still run the music school by day. So Monday through Friday, I'm there. I have a staff that works on the app all day while I'm running the school. And then when I'm when I get back from the school, I'm usually working on it most of the night. It's a passion project for me, although I do think it brings a ton of value. And so that's a big reason why I'm so passionate about it. It was an idea I had that sort of evolved over many years. And I found myself at a point to where I realized the technology had come far enough to where I believed that I could build this. Luckily I had the people around me, the resources to put it all together. And I just wanted to be extremely streamlined so that anyone and everyone who has the ability to offer value could be a sort of like a turnkey for them. They wouldn't have to do a ton of crazy setup. You know, some people who want to offer like Skype lessons, for example, they have a lot to set up. They have a lot of moving parts. They have to use 4 or 5 different tools, internet tools like Skype and PayPal. And, you know, there's a lot going on with that. I wanted to create a very streamlined approach so that anyone could set up their profile, put their rate in, explain what they're offering, put a little intro video together, and just offer their time to someone else. And the app takes care of everything. If I book you for 20 minutes, you know, the timer starts as soon as we're face to face on the app. We get a 5-minute reminder that it's going to happen. Then we get on there. We're both looking at it. We both hit start session. The timer starts. When it gets to 20 minutes or whatever, however much time that I paid for, it shuts down. It does give you a 2-minute warning if you want to add time. And what happens is, as soon as the call is done, the money flows into the meat hook wallet of the host. And then
you mean the $1 million Venmo check for each episode?
Well, that's what you would get if you would you were on.
See what I did there? That's probably humor. That's
you
humor.
Should probably sign up.
I mean, I am already signed up.
Yeah, I think both Scott and I are on.
Yeah. Bro. We're signed
terrific.
Up. So yeah, we.
You
I've been
really going to be able to experience it firsthand. I really think you're going to dig it.
I mean, honestly, I've known about this. Jamie told me about this a while back. I know that this episode feels like it's sponsored by Jamie because, aside from financially, it is. We love Jamie Roberts. We've had so many of her people on the show, including Jamie Roberts, and she told me about this a while back. And then when, you know, we had the last minute cancellation, we reached out to Jamie. She brought you up, and I was like, perfect.
Yeah, Jamie's great. She's helped me market it. I'm just trying to spread the word to as many people as possible because obviously it's more.
You're trying to spread the Waldman's words to as many people as possible because 25,000 minimum listen, but this episode, 10 gazillion people are hearing every word right now.
Yes. 10 gazillion?
Yep.
Oh my God.
Empirical data.
You should have warned me, man.
You keep telling me what I should have done on my show. This is my show, Aunt C. Don't tell me what to do. So we're almost done. So can you please let the tens of gazillions of people listening know how they can, you know, get the app and also how they can check out what you're doing?
Absolutely. So the app is available on the iOS App Store. It's called Meat Hook. That's Meat, MeetHook. It's one word, Meat Hook. And it's available on the App Store, iOS, and the Google Play Store. And you can go to meathook.com. And there's links there that lead you to the app, and you can also sign up through the web on meathook.com. So as far as everything else that I do, probably the best place to send everyone is my Instagram, which is antsy2020. So it's antsy2020.
That's pretty streamlined. So I'm gonna dip out, but I know that Emily, I think she has one question, and then she's going to tell the tens of gazillions of people listening how they can listen more.
Well, if you want to keep with your first answer of interesting, go for it. But here's your second chance to come up with another adjective for this second part.
Okay. My next adjective will be exciting.
Exciting?
Yeah.
All right, yeah. I'll take it. I think it was very exciting.
Right? It's interesting. It was interesting.
I do too. Huh.
I like it. Well, I'm guilty of saying fine a lot or okay, but. All right. Well, thank you so much for being on. Just real quick, you know, you can listen to Waldman's Words every single Tuesday at 5 p.m. Pacific time, 8 p.m. Eastern time, or you could listen to the podcast on a whole lot of stuff. You can listen on Adobe.com, Spotify, iTunes, and you can even enable Adobe Radio on your Amazon Alexa and ask it to play Waldman's Words. So you can basically listen to us anywhere. Antsy, thank you so much again for being a guest. I know this is last minute, but I think it was a great episode. Any final parting thoughts before we log off?
Well, I just want to thank you guys for doing what you do. I think it was a pleasure to be on the show, and I'm excited to do this again soon. Hopefully, you know, as things progress, we can reconnect, and I look forward to helping as many artists and upcoming musicians as I can with through the Meet Hook app.
Beautiful and well said. All right. Have a good night, everybody.